Next case is Day versus United States Attorney General. We'll give everyone a moment to get settled. Mr. Osorio, we're ready when you are.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Ben Osorio, and I, along with Mr. Goodman, represent the petitioner in this case, Mr. Everton Day. I'd like to start with where I think the parties are somewhat in agreement, and we may be able to tailor this case for a narrow remand. Both the government and Mr. Day agree that the board incorrectly applied this court's realistic probability test, and that the statute itself can satisfy that. So given that the board never considered whether some of the substances that Mr. Day referred to would possibly qualify as conduct that's vile, based, or depraved, this court can narrowly remand there. Aside from that, we start to get...
Explain to me more why we would remand in that case.
So this court, in both Zarate and Latour, recently remanded when the board committed a legal error. So this court could say, board, you've not conducted the realistic probability test in the way that we conduct this in the 11th Circuit. And so now, given that, you need to look at the facts that Mr. Day presented, and would all of these substances, would transportation into Virginia qualify as morally turpitudinous conduct?
In other words, the board would have to look at the list as it existed at the time of conviction, pick the one that's the least harmful. I think you mentioned one in your brief that's escaping me at the moment, but it's a substance I've never heard of before. And you say it doesn't exist, at least at some point on the federal schedule, and see whether that is a moral turpitudinous crime, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
I
just wanted to clarify, I'll ask your opposing counsel when he comes up, but you're saying that the government has agreed with you that it would stipulate that we should do that, or that is what its preferred resolution is? Is that what I understand the concession to be?
No, Your Honor.
The government just concedes that the board did it wrong.
Right.
But it says, doesn't it say that under Telez, I'm going to mispronounce the name, so I won't bother doing it, but under our recent decision, I think Telemachy, that we, as a legal conclusion, can reach this issue, correct?
That's the government's position, Your Honor, but I think it becomes a little bit thornier from there, and there's obviously other additional reasons for remand in light of the Virginia legislature's decriminalizing, legalizing, and now allowing the licensed sale of recreational
marijuana.
So let
me ask you, you spend a lot of time arguing about overbreadth, and overbreadth is really important when we apply the categorical approach for violent felonies and especially for drug offenses. But as I understand the moral turpitude cases, overbreadth really isn't the issue. The issue is simply, is this crime in its least... least criminal conduct form a crime that is moral turpitudinous or not? And the first is whether there's the relevant intent, and the second is whether it's vile, depraved, and so on and so forth. Do I have that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So what does it matter if something is listed or delisted by Virginia later on, or the federal government before or afterwards? Don't we just ask whether that the least criminal on the list is... A, there was an intent element with regard to that, and there's an argument about whether you have preserved that or not. And secondly, whether something you have preserved clearly is whether that meets the test of depraved, vile, so on and so forth, right?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. And I would say on page 13 of my opening brief, I said that this offense lacks evil intent. I understand that later in my reply brief, I referred to it as specific intent, but I believe that's enough. And I was very consistent in arguing this is a regulatory offense throughout. And I believe by making a regulatory offense, I consistently argued that it lacks the mental culpability that's required to qualify.
Let's not worry about that at the moment. I'm more concerned about, or I'm more interested in, why, back to my question to you, why does it matter, unlike it would for when we're comparing the word controlled substance offense in applying the INA, but in a moral turpitude case, why it matters whether something has been delisted by the Virginia or by the federal government later on?
I guess I would point to my citations of the Attorney General and the way that they list and delist controlled substances. So if the Attorney General has made a decision to take it off, or some of that authority has been delegated to the DEA. And so if they're making that decision, aren't they saying, okay, we no longer view this as ripe for abuse, or, you know, all the societal ills that the board is concerned about in Matter of Corn? But I still think there is a larger problem now, given the Virginia legislature has allowed the recreational use of marijuana, the licensed sales. So given that the government's whole point is we should defer to the Virginia legislature.
Can I ask you, is marijuana the least culpable now? Is that what you tell me? So you have the list. There's 22 on there, as I understand it. You tell me. I want to know which one's the least, because I don't want to pick it. And then you tell me, well, no, it's really this one here.
I mean, I think in light of the Virginia legislature's and many other state legislatures' decision to allow recreational sales of marijuana, decriminalize it, allow the licensed sale, I have a hard time thinking how could this be anything else other than a regulatory offense. So in light of that, I would argue.
Has the government decriminalized trafficking of marijuana?
No, Your Honor. And I would say that the violation of all of those regulations and trafficking statutes that are still in place are still crimes, but that goes to the crux of whether this is morally repugnant. So just like I've cited a number of cases where, you know, deregulated sales of liquor or tobacco or trafficking in contraband cigarettes is still a crime. You know, trafficking in marijuana would still be a crime that the state could be punished, but it's just a license
issue. Is cocaine morally repugnant?
Yes, but the recreational use of cocaine has not been legalized by 17 states.
But your client's offense here is transporting, it's a trafficking offense, right? And it says with intent to sell or distribute. I'm looking at the Virginia Code 18-2-248.01. That's his crime, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And at the time he was convicted, it was trafficking with intent to sell or distribute one or more ounces and then of controlled substances.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So that was the offense. And intent's right there with intent to sell or distribute.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right, so it's on the face of it, it's got a tent.
Right, but now Virginia has actually struck.
I'm not interested in now. I'm interested at the time he was convicted, what the crime was. I'm just trying to clarify that.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and so tell me why trafficking an illegal substance, I don't particularly care what the substance is, it was criminalized, why that's not a crime of moral turpitude. Trafficking an illegal controlled substances, just at a broad generality, a categorical. Whatever it is, as long as it's illegal.
I guess if that substance wasn't prone to abuse or could have no sort of ill effects on society or the community at large, if Virginia criminalized something sort of out of haste, we all know that chemists can modify drugs in different manners and fashions, and so a lot of times these state legislatures and the federal government included, they'll criminalize something, you know, out of a need to protect, and then later when they find out there's actually no way that you can be abused or modified, or you know, it's not a risk to the public at large, then they take it back off. So if we made something
the
illegal,
the chemical that you discuss in your brief apparently is two chemical reactions away from becoming fentanyl, isn't it? I wouldn't say that was accidental that was characterized as a controlled substance by one government body or another.
No, I would agree wholeheartedly with you, Your Honor, on the front end, but then we have to consider why did the DEA take it off in 2010? So again, there's a whole process for how these.
This goes back to my point. Sorry, and to go back to it, but I asked you about cocaine. You said yes, it's moral turpitudinous. There was a time that cocaine was in soft drinks and was readily available. Is that not moral turpitudinous then?
Again, Your Honor, this is the problem. I agree wholeheartedly with CIMTs, is that it's an evolving standard.
It's not a problem. It either is or is not. In other words, the fact that it's listed or not does not make the difference. It either is moral turpitudinous or not moral turpitudinous. I understand your point is that our morals shift over time. But with regard to controlled substances, they either are problematic or vile, the trafficking of them is problematic or vile, or they're not. Whether they're listed or not seems to be completely besides the point. I mean, this chemical substance that Judge Grant mentioned, 5 years from now we may see that, hey, it's being turned into fentanyl and the government may put it back on. That doesn't make it any less moral turpitudinous or not, right?
Yes, Your Honor, to some extent I agree with that, but then we still are stuck with the marijuana issue. How are we dealing with the national standards that have clearly evolved on this to treat it more like alcohol and tobacco? And
but drug trafficking is still illegal for marijuana, and it's not illegal to sell a lot of beer, right? Isn't that a difference?
Well, actually, I think that hits on my key point in that this court would distinguish marijuana from the other substances that are listed and controlled is now marijuana, like beer, like tobacco, is recreationally allowed in Virginia.
Are you allowed to traffic marijuana in Virginia?
No, Your Honor, but you're not allowed to traffic cigarettes or traffic alcohol either without a license. So that's my point, that it becomes a licensing issue at that point.
Can you traffic? Was he trafficking marijuana with a license? Isn't that an entirely different thing?
He was not, Your Honor. It did not exist at that time in Virginia.
So what you're saying is that he committed a crime of trafficking in a controlled substance at a time when that trafficking was illegal, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Ramnitz?
May it please the Court, Your Honors. I'm Tim Ramnitz on behalf of the United States Attorney General. Petitioner challenges the board's determination that his conviction under Virginia law for trafficking with intent to distribute 5 or more pounds of marijuana, 1 or more ounces of cocaine, or Schedule 1 or 2 controlled substance does not categorically constitute a crime involving moral turpitude. The court owes deference to the agency's determination.
Yeah, but counsel, at least as this case has been litigated, and this is part of the problem, that immigration judge found indivisibility, found it was not divisible. That, as best as I can tell, was not appealed and not decided by the BIA. In other words, it took as a given that it was indivisible. And that is taken as a given to us, at least in briefing. I know in the letter brief now there's some retrenching on that. But it seems to me that we need to take as a given, or at least assume, that it's indivisible for right now, which means that the whole list comes in and not just cocaine and marijuana, right?
That's correct.
Although I'm not sure it matters, because he's saying, your opposing counsel is now saying, unlike he did in his brief, that marijuana is the least criminal of those, the list, as opposed to the chemical that is specifically referenced in the brief, right?
Right. Well, so 2 points. DHS did continue to challenge divisibility up to the board. The board just declined to reach it. Second.
And you haven't appealed that to us?
No, because when the board doesn't reach an issue like that, we generally will not step in front of the board. But when the court seemed to be requesting that in the letter brief order, we are more than happy to argue divisibility. The second point is, I think, what Judge Hull mentioned on the petitioner's argument. So we're not looking at any particular drug here. It doesn't matter what the substance is.
What if Virginia tomorrow puts sugar? Because sugar is causing an obesity problem in the state of Virginia, and it wishes not to have any transportation of sugar brought into the state.
From petitioner's brief, it's hypothetical. Well, I think when we're getting to, this also goes with his argument about alcohol, maybe that's a benign substance.
Well, let's use sugar.
Sugar, sure. It's much different trafficking in a substance that's illegal than it is merely possessing for recreational use a substance. So,
well, sugar is illegal in Virginia. They have said you can't possess it, you can't have it, it can't be in food, don't bring it here from out of state.
And the dangers inherent in trafficking are still always there. So alcohol was at one point prohibited famously, and lots of violence accompanied the trafficking that occurred then. It doesn't matter what we may have viewed alcohol as later on. Trafficking itself inherently involves violence. Someone driving through Virginia with sugar, it's outlawed in Virginia, but they want to make it to the D.C. border where it's legal, they're still more likely to engage in vehicular flight from police because they know they're going to be arrested for a felony. They're more likely to engage with police officers. The trafficking itself is the problem. And that's why illicitly trafficking is what involves reprehensible conduct in this case. It doesn't matter what the substance is. But here, we're getting ahead of ourselves because it's not sugar. We're talking about substances that the Virginia legislature has stated are harmful, they're addictive, and there's no medical purpose for this.
Your opposing counsel is right to an extent. At some point, I mean, this is a moral judgment that's being made. And at some point, society just sees some things as differently than others. In other words, if the crime was possession of 5 pounds or more of cocaine, not necessarily for trafficking, I think we would say that was moral turpitudinous, or at least a drug crime of some sort. But if it's now possession of a lot of beer, that would not be something that we would condemn in any way. You would agree with that?
Possession.
Just straight possession.
And trafficking, again, that's a different animal altogether, because you are engaging in illicit distribution of a subject to others. So you're not really possessing it for your own use. And we would say getting yourself drunk, for example, that's not reprehensible nowadays by our standards. But you are distributing this to others, which is what the board has long said, and courts have also said that is what you're doing that's reprehensible. Because it's not for yourself. You're putting this on other people. And you're engaging in societal harm that way.
Why shouldn't we send this back for the board to make this call?
To make which call?
Well, the call of whether marijuana is moral turpitudinous or the trafficking of it is moral turpitudinous.
Well, I believe the board did make this call. The immigration judge's decision is very
thorough. Not really. What it said was in Virginia, and again, the argument was a little different than it is here. We weren't talking about marijuana then. But what the court there said is, under our test and how we think the 11th Circuit would apply it, the reasonable probability test would require this prosecution to be for something on that list, in other words, something other than cocaine and marijuana, or that they have to point to an actual prosecution in Virginia. And they weren't able to do that with the chemical that they mentioned, and that's why they lost. That's why the board ruled the way it did. We know that that's wrong. You've admitted that's wrong commendably to us. Why shouldn't we get the board to do that? And the reason I ask is because Judge Joe Flatt wrote a concurring opinion in one of the, I think Zararte or Latora, I think Latora maybe, in one of the cases that we sent you. And his point was a good one, which is, you know, the board is making the sort of Chevron deference administrative determinations on each individual statute. And shouldn't we let it do that and make that call and then apply Chevron deference to it rather than us making a legal determination up front? And that seems wise to me in some ways. What do you say to that?
I think that is generally the best course for the courts to take, is to remand in those instances for the agency to address something like this, whether or not there's reprehensible conduct in the first instance. However, the board specifically states it's affirming the immigration judge's decision, and as this court has stated under Jahar, standard review case, when the court or the board's affirming the immigration judge, it looks at the immigration judge's decision as modified by the board. And the immigration judge's decision takes petitioner's argument at full force. It says, look, we recognize that there's these non-federally controlled substances, but that's not the point. You are distributing substances which have been deemed harmful to society, and under our precedence, matter of Corn, matter of Garcia Como, that's long been held to involve reprehensible conduct. The board looks at that and says, we're affirming that termination, but moreover, you haven't even pointed to cases where they've actually prosecuted this conduct. So that's why the government described in the brief is this is really extraneous reasoning. They erroneously applied the realistic probability approach, but it wasn't necessary to the termination in that case. The immigration judge already did the heavy lifting, and the board affirmed that finding.
Well, the board's allowed to do that. I mean, the board's allowed to ignore its administrative judges as much as they want, but it's hard for me to say that that's extraneous reasoning or unnecessary. It seems to be that it applies the test. It says the respondent asserts that one can be convicted of the statute, even if passing through Virginia with the intent to give away a controlled substance in another state where that substance is legal. The respondent also claims that one can be convicted under the statute for giving away a controlled substance listed in Schedule 1s but that are not listed. However, the respondent does not claim that his conviction involved either of these scenarios, and he has not identified any case in Virginia applied. And then ultimately reaches the conclusion that does. So it seems to me that was essential to the board's holding, the misapplication of the reasonable probability standard and test.
Well, I don't see any place in the board's opinion where they disagree with the immigration judge, however. They affirm the immigration judge. They don't separate the reasoning out saying we're not agreeing with the immigration judge for this particular reason. They affirm the immigration judge's decision, which was very thorough, saying any controlled substance under Virginia law, we recognizing that there's non-federally controlled substances, that is not the point. The point is that you distributed these unlawful substances. That is a crime involving moral turpitude. The board doesn't take any issue with that. It affirms the immigration judge's decision and then adds, moreover, you haven't even pointed to cases where this happened.
Except for the divisibility point, which you now take issue with.
Divisibility.
Right.
So when we're talking about crime involving moral turpitude, it affirmed the immigration judge and then added, moreover, you haven't even shown this happens in case law. I don't think that's necessary to the board's disposition of the case. But otherwise, we could talk about divisibility if the panel would like to. I think it's something the court could reach if it doesn't agree with the board's crime involving moral turpitude issue. And I believe that divisibility in this case follows the Fourth Circuit precedents in Baugh and Cuculon. It's a Virginia statute. It's a drug statute. The Fourth Circuit has looked
They were different statutes. You agree
different they were different statutes. And the Fourth Circuit has looked at many of these, though, at this point. And they said they all involved the prosecution to prove the identity of the drug involved. And we noted in our letter.
But the Virginia courts have not, and the Fourth Circuit, have not said that all Virginia controlled substance statutes require as an element the naming of the drug and the amount, right?
That's correct. What we look at under Mathis is like what was suggested by the case law. And then we add that to jury instructions, we can add that to the record of conviction and determine whether or not this is a separate crime. And the government argued that at the very least, this is a disjunctively divisible crime for the three substances mentioned on the face of the statute: marijuana, cocaine, and then Schedule 1 or 2 substances.
Except that in taking that sneak peek under, which allows us to do under the Shepherd documents, cocaine is not mentioned in the indicting, in the charging papers and in the judgment, right, for the cocaine charges?
I don't believe there are cocaine charges in this case. So I think that actually supports this idea because cocaine is not mentioned.
What were the three convictions for?
Three convictions were, one was for transportation distribution of 5 or more pounds of marijuana, and right. The other two say Schedule 1 or 2 controlled substance.
Right. I thought we all agree that it was cocaine, but just not mentioned or charged as cocaine, right?
I have not seen cocaine in the record of conviction.
Okay.
But what I'm arguing is that disjunctively amongst the three mentioned in the text, cocaine, marijuana, and Schedule 1 or 2 substance, the record of conviction actually supports that because they do marijuana and Schedule 1 or 2 controlled substance. Cocaine does not seem to be involved in this case, so there's no cocaine. So at least by the text, it seems divisible in those three ways. And you look at jury instructions, it also says name of drug and quantity must be inserted by the prosecution. And quantity only comes into a question under this statute when it's cocaine or marijuana. It has to be 1 or more ounces of cocaine, 5 more pounds of marijuana. So jury instructions will also seem to be in accord with this, that you'd have to put in at least marijuana or cocaine if those drugs were involved. And then case law seems to also suggest that the prosecution has to prove this as well. And so petitioner only focuses on sentencing factors. That's one way to do it. But there's this other way that Mathis lays out. Mathis doesn't even talk about the Apprendi sentencing factors. It talks about case law, jury instructions, and the peak of the record, which I think supports at least facial divisibility in this case. And then you see clearly that one of his convictions involved 5 or more pounds of marijuana, and he has a federally controlled substance as part of his conviction record. And as he's conceded time and again, trafficking in a federally controlled substance involves moral turpitude. He's just stating that if it's not federally controlled, then it doesn't involve moral turpitude, which is the government's brief went into quite detail, arguing that's a false equivalency. He states the federal government's not declaring these drugs are harmless, just perhaps has not got around to it. State legislatures are always circumventing or always battling circumventions around drug laws, and Virginia has done so in this case. Unless the panel has any further questions, the government will rest.
Thank you. Mr. Osorio, you've got 5 more minutes.
Thank you, Honor.
So I think that the government's point here that because Virginia made it illegal, it must be bad, goes to my argument about why this is a malum prohibitum offense.
Well, that's not their argument, at least here. Their argument is that the trafficking of a substance that's listed is harmful and could cause all sorts of evils because of the nature of making something illegal in the case of alcohol. If alcohol were made illegal tomorrow, there would be a black market for it and all sorts of things would happen that we know happened when the last time it happened, and that happens when we've made drugs illegal. So we know that harms come with listing something as illegal. That's what the government is arguing is the harm that is being targeted, not the substance itself.
But then I still think we have to then concern ourselves with the evolution of marijuana itself. Now that this...
Well, let me ask you this. One of the last things your opposing counsel said was that you have conceded, and I think he's correct in this, that if something is federally listed, you agree that it is a moral turpitude crime. You made that argument with regard to that chemical you mentioned in your brief because that had been delisted, but marijuana, we all agree, is still listed federally.
So two things. I would say that I'm not conceding that it is necessarily still a crime involving moral turpitude. I conceded that matter of corn is the law of the land, you know, with regards to the agency and has been for a couple of decades now, that trafficking in controlled substances, federally controlled substances, was deemed a CIMT. There's a couple of issues with that, given one, also the national views and standards on marijuana, but two, this court recently in Fuad Saeed addressed, you know, whether Florida marijuana was overbroad compared to the federal definition.
But that's an aggravated, this is where I started with you. Overbreath deals with aggravated felonies and whether something is a controlled substance offense, different than the CIMT thing. The CIMT issue is just different. It's different elements. It asks different questions.
Right. So, but then the court would have to ask itself, is importing into Virginia unfertilized seeds that can never be used to achieve a euphoric high or can never be grown, that is Virginia prosecutes, and we've cited to a case, you know, in our letter brief, that Virginia still prosecutes the thing and includes in the amount of marijuana unfertilized seeds. So is there an inherent morally repugnant element of that conduct?
But why does the court ask itself that? Why don't we look to state law to see what's been classified as a controlled substance?
I mean, the court obviously would consider what the definition of marijuana in Virginia is and then say, okay, would transportation or importation of these things into Virginia be morally repugnant? Again, I think that this court should remand for the board to make that decision in the first instance, both in light that it didn't consider several of the substances that we listed, but also in light of the Virginia legislature's legalizing of marijuana and allowing the licensed sales. I think the board should have a first opportunity to examine, does Virginia now, if we're adopting community standards, view this as morally repugnant?
But what I think we can judge by the fact that trafficking is still a crime, but what would you say is the qualitative difference between the moral turpitude of trafficking in a federally controlled substance versus the moral turpitude of trafficking in a state-controlled substance?
I guess,
where do you see the delta there?
I would draw the line at trafficking in narcotic substances, which, you know, again, there's not allowed the recreational use. And so
is the rule that trafficking in narcotic substances is morally turpitudinous, or is the rule that you've cited that trafficking in federally controlled substances is morally turpitudinous?
I would agree that the standard has been trafficking in federally controlled substances, but where I would draw the line, Your Honor, is trafficking in substances that are not permitted for recreational use. I would draw the line there. Because I would think that the Virginia legislature's findings that marijuana does not have an ill effect towards society and allowing the licensed sales shows that they have investigated this process enough, and by allowing the licensed sale of alcohol, by allowing the licensed sale of tobacco.
Did I miss where Virginia decriminalized the trafficking of marijuana?
No, but it allows it with a license, just like they haven't decriminalized trafficking in alcohol without a license, just like they haven't decriminalized trafficking in cigarettes without a license.
Is alcohol a controlled substance?
It's regulated.
Does it qualify as a controlled substance under Virginia law?
I am not exactly familiar with the Virginia statutes on that, but I know that it's controlled by the ABC and is regulated by sales and tax, just the same way that marijuana now is in Virginia, Your Honor. And I see that my time has concluded. Thank you.
And thank you. I understand. I think that you are a pro bono counsel in this case. We
yes,
appreciate
Your Honor.
Your service as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good day.
That was our final case. We're in recess for the day until 9 a.m. tomorrow. Thank you.
All right.